Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantuck Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I want to thank everybody. Last Tuesday was, well, yesterday actually, St. Patrick's Day was the 6th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and I want to thank all of you for all of your wonderful, kind messages, and it's just been a really exciting. I can't believe it. It's the time has gone so quickly, and I'm just so grateful to all of you. Now, well, at the bottom of the hour, I have a guest from the Pinellas Writers Group, and this is exciting because I'm going to be talking to them on Saturday, and one of these Zoom things, I wish it was in person, but it's going to be fun to talk to Shayla McBride a little later at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I get to turn to an author that I know all of you will just find amazing, because she is amazing. And Barbara Hinsky is, I think it's Hinsky? Barbara Hinsky is, well, she's done what all of you writers out there have dreamt about. She got herself a television program. One of her books was picked up, so I'm excited to talk to her about that. But I also want to talk to her about this wonderful series. You know, sometimes you just get a series that you really, really get a kick out of. And I am telling you, this new book is so much fun. And I just want to welcome you to the show, Barbara. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Patsy, and congratulations on your 6-year anniversary.
Well, thank you very much. You know, it's been a hoot, I can tell you. I've had so much fun. I get to talk to everybody. And, you know, one of the things, you know, I love mysteries. It's history and mystery. That's always been my thing. So when I got your books, well, the most recent one, which is Restoring What Was Lost, I was so excited about it because it involves a rare book, a theft of a rare book. And I love books. And of course, rare books are just set my, you know, blood pulsing because it gets so exciting. And this series is so lovely. And of course, there's a picture of a dog on it, which is really makes it lots of fun. So let's talk first about that book. I think that's your most recent one, right?
I have a Christmas novella.
Yeah, well, then we're going to talk about the Christmas book. But let's talk first about a little bit about Restoring What Was Lost, because I got a kick out of it. I often tell people that, you know, Alfred Lord Tennyson is just wonderful to sort of have at your fingertips. If you have a few quotes from him, you can't go wrong. You know, there's always a good quote from him. And but in this case, you put a new spin on Alfred Lord Tennyson.
You know, thank you for asking about that. Yeah, Restoring What Was Lost is the 7th book in my Rosemont series of novels. And I tend to gravitate in each book. There's a little bit of mystery. The series is solidly women's fiction, but it's got all of the books have mystery, thriller, suspense added in it. And so the mystery part was revolved around this rare book. And, you know, in prior books I've had Hotel Silver, and I've, you know, got a painting and a stamp coming up, and just different things, I guess, because I personally like collectibles, and I like the mystery of finding something either in your attic or at a yard sale that might be valuable. So I picked rare books for Restoring What Was Lost because my series has pivoted. The main character has gone from being the mayor of the town now to being the president of the local liberal arts college. And they have a library with a big rare book collection, and there's been some mischief in connection with that.
Well, it's a fun book. It's a really fun book. I really enjoyed it. And, of course, the cover is beautiful. That's always, you know, it's nice when you have a cover artist who really captures the book, and that's so great. You know, so this series is very, you know, it's really great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the entire series, about how you came out with the character?
Well, I would love to do that. Thank you. Yes, actually, I came up with the series and the characters in 2010 when I was recovering from a car accident where I broke my neck. And I had double vision for months. I had some nerve damage. I still have some issues with that. But I couldn't, with a broken neck and you're in that big old neck brace thing, you can't watch TV really with double vision. I couldn't be on a computer, all that. All I could do was think. So I thought up this series. And Rosemont is, well, Maggie Martin is the protagonist. She's a 50-something woman who loses her husband suddenly to a heart attack, and that's bad. She finds out after he died he was embezzling from the college where he was the president. That's worse. And then she finds out he had a third family, or a second family in Scottsdale. That was the third thing that was really bad. So with all of that, she finds out, she learns that he had inherited this fabulous stone manor home in the Midwest called Rosemont. Okay, well, so, and now that he's gone, so she's inherited it. Well, inheriting a mansion isn't such a bad thing. She goes to Westbury to, just to look at the house, because she really is wanting answers on who this guy was that she was married to for so long and evidently didn't know very well. When she steps through the front door for the first time, she knows she's home. And she, and that actually happened to me when I bought my current house. I write about that feeling. So she just, she's a forensic accountant. She works from a computer. She can work anywhere. And she ends her life, moves into Rosemont, and then inherits a stray dog, adopts her. That leads her to her future love interest, who's the veterinarian, and then the series.
And then the series. And it starts, I always love a book where at the very beginning they have a map, so you have a little map of the town. And, it's so exciting always when you come out with a character who sort of takes over and yet you can run with it. And you certainly did with this character. So it's just a very enjoyable series. And so this was book 7, and I don't know if there's going to be more, but it's really great. I think, are there going to be more?
There are. You know, I finished it at book 5. I thought it would be a 5-book series, and I had so many readers ask for more that I thought, okay, I'll write more, but I very much didn't want it to be stale. So then I had Maggie, the main character, move into a new job role and brought in new characters. And now I'm going to be writing a Rosemont Christmas novella. I'm going to start writing it on Monday.
mentioning Christmas, it's always, nowadays with television, they have this Christmas in July. So we have Christmas sort of coming up all the time, and in your case, it's very relevant. And how I discovered you, of course, was because of your Christmas story, which was picked up, and we're going to talk about that. But first, what I want to do, Rita Moreau, who herself is involved in accounting on a different level, just loves your work. And she brought me to your attention. She said, oh, you have to read, you just have to read Marinsky, and you have to listen. And she wanted to do a very special thing for you. We do on Joy on Paper, I do these little promos called book buzzes, and we do them so that we can help promote authors' books long after they've been on the program. So we play these book buzzes, they're 1-minute little promos, and we play them. We might play them 2 months, 2 years after an author's been on the program. So Rita Moreau has done this one for you. So just listen, and then after that, we'll come back and we'll talk about your very, very special Christmas book, okay?
Yes, thank you, gosh. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. From Barbara Hinsky comes this heartwarming tale celebrating the generosity of the human spirit and the irresistible pull of love. Here's the buzz. Vernon Lynn expects Christmas of 1952 to be the best holiday she's had since the war ended.
But as she's leaving the bank, a frigid wind off Lake Erie catches her hard-earned Christmas club savings, whisking the bills into the busy streets of downtown Cleveland and devastating her plans. Strangers come to her aid, though no one anticipates the power of their chance encounter or the seeds of happiness Berna's lost money will sow. From Barbara Hinsky, best-selling author of the Rosemont series, comes this heartwarming Christmas tale celebrating the generosity of the human spirit and the irresistible pull of love. An instant holiday classic for admirers of It's a Wonderful Life and The Gift of Magi. And it's now a Hallmark Channel original movie. This is Rita Marone reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to this webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Marone, buzzing off for now.
Okay, Barbara. You know, as I said, we just want to keep promoting your books all the time.
Thank you so much. That is so incredibly kind and generous, and how nice of her.
It is, and she loves to do them. And, of course, let's talk now about The Christmas Club, which is the book that was picked up by Hallmark, because it is a lovely book.
Thank you. Yes, it was a 2019 Christmas movie, and they have played it in July, and they played it during the lockdown to cheer people up, and it's on DVD, so it's done very well for them. They changed the book quite a bit because they made it current day, and I love the movie, but I also love the book. They're different, so I always tell people, do both.
Yes.
They're quite different.
But they did a great job with it, and the storyline, you know, what they picked up is fantastic. So it must have been, you know, this is sort of the dream of all authors, that one day they'll get a call and somebody will say, you know, yeah, we'd like to make a film out of your book. So it certainly, I know, has helped you a great deal. You've gotten a wonderful name recognition. I know that you have a lot of followers now on Facebook and on other mediums, and out of it, you know, it's been pretty exciting, huh?
It's been incredibly exciting. Yes, it has certainly up-leveled my platform beyond my wildest dreams. I've got, you know, other works that are being considered for the screen, which is nice, which, you know, having one thing already done gives you instant credibility. So it is, and to have your one film project have been very successful, which it was very successful for Hallmark. So it's been an absolute joy. And I got to go to Winnipeg where they were filming. I spent a week on the set.
Oh, wow. That must have been exciting. It's wonderful. Isn't it wonderful to be on a set when they're filming?
It's unbelievably exciting, and I've learned so much. Actors, crew, they work so hard. It's not very glamorous when it's being done. It is nothing but sheer hard work. But it was wonderful. They treated us, my husband and I went, they treated us like kings and queens. They were so kind, and it was an experience I'll never forget.
Well, it is. People never understand quite until they're involved in a movie production. They don't understand what goes on. There are so many people involved. It's not, you know, it looks so simple when you see it on the screen. Oh, somebody just put the camera out there and, you know, just sort of happened by magic. But it's hard work, and the team work that goes into producing a film is amazing.
The level of detail, you know, we were there when they were filming the mandatory sort of festival scene in a Hallmark movie. They always have a Christmas festival. They were setting up in a large gated lawn area of a private girls' school. You know, this is July, so they have the fake snow everywhere, including across the street and on everywhere. And they were filming one scene. We were sitting in Video Village with the producers and the directors and watching the big screens, and the producers said, oh, no, cut, we've got to redo it because a little bit of the snow across the street. I mean, this must have been 200 yards away. He noticed that the fake snow had pulled up, so he's like, nope, we got to fix that and redo it.
Oh, they do. It's wonderful. I used to do that. I used to be on set sometimes, and I love it so much. It is, the people are so professional, and they're so good at their jobs. And each individual person plays an important role. So now, of course, they always are happy. You know, they are happy always to have the writer there, although they won't necessarily make any changes that the writer wants. But I think the people, when we're working on a set, we like having the writer. We like to get to know the person who wrote the thing that we're filming, and it makes it, gives it a level of excitement even for the crew.
You know, that was what they told us. Of course, I went knowing I'm not going to say one negative word. That's not my place. They aren't looking to me for suggestions. So I didn't have any, but I knew I wasn't going to do that. But it was so moving to hear words that I had written, you know, set by actors on the screen. At one point, both my husband and I were teary. And they turned around and looked at us and said, oh my gosh. And of course, the next morning when we came in, everybody had heard about it. And what we were told was, you know, everybody, like you say, has their own little slice that they are focusing on in great detail. And nobody really pulls back to 30,000 feet to see how this is coming along. And there's no audience, but we were an audience. And they found it so encouraging that they had moved us to tears. They're like, okay, we're hitting the mark here.
Oh, well,
it's really exciting. And they put us in as extras. My husband and I are both extras in the movie.
Oh, that's always fun. I love it. Yeah, they love to do that because they know that forevermore, you know, your children, your grandchildren, 100 years from now, people will still be, you know, watching this, and you've got this little bit part, and and it's lovely when they do that. I love that. It shows the Hallmark team are, of course, they're famed in Hollywood for being just putting together wonderful, wonderful people. And so I know that they treated you like royalty.
Yeah, there was no, I thought, oh gosh, we're going to be in the way. People are going to get snippy. I was expecting people to be divas and there to be crosswords. None of it. Not one single uncivil word was uttered. And these are people that, you know, it's a 14-hour minimum day. And it was a heat wave, and people are wearing winter coats on screen. And, you know, lots of reasons why you might get a little cranky. Nope, none of it.
No, people don't. Really, they don't. On the sets, there's something about working on a set. You're so happy at the moment. You're in the moment and you're so happy, and you know, in the back of your mind, you know that this is going to be on film, and you know that it's going to, you know, be running for years and years and years. And you think, wow, I'm a little bit a part of that. And it gives you a very, very, very special feeling about yourself as a person, as a worker. So and of course, I think, now, being a writer, that you now have this opening, and it's a big opening, because once the door opens, it's a big opening. And I'm so happy that you got there, because, you know, you had a lot of, you were a lawyer, you're one of this, you know, when you were a lawyer, did you ever think that one day you'd have a program on the Hallmark Channel?
Oh, heck no.
No.
No, that seems... So, you know, I was a business lawyer, for heaven's sake. So, no, never occurred to me.
And isn't it exciting what life can lead to? And when you have,
yes.
Now, was it your dream to be a writer when you were young? Was this, and you decided to be a business lawyer just to make money and put aside writing for 20 or 30 years?
No, I mean, really, I never even considered it. And I wasn't... My undergraduate education was as an industrial engineer, so I was always on the mathy side of things. Went to law school, practiced law, did lots of business writing. No creative writing, but when my dad retired, he wrote whodunits. He wrote mysteries, and they were quite good. He never even tried to have them published. So I always thought, well, when I retire, maybe I'll edit them, have them edited, and I'll have them published. And then I broke my neck in a car accident, and I was walking as part of my therapy, and I could hear my dad's voice in my mind saying, Barb, write your own book. So I thought about the Rosemont series, and there it went. And I chose my maiden name as Hinsky. I wrote under my maiden name because I thought, what if I'm a terrible writer? I don't want to embarrass myself in my lawyer world. So I chose my maiden name, and it turned out I wasn't a terrible writer, and it was all fine.
Well, it so certainly worked out beautifully for you.
It did, yeah. And, you know, that Hallmark platform may extend to my most recent series, which, if I can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, please.
Close to my heart is the Guiding Emily series. I wrote, I live close to the Foundation for Blind Children in Phoenix, Arizona. And I toured them recently, a couple years ago, and I was so moved by the work they do with children and adults that I said, you know, what can I do to help you? What do you need? And of course, they're a nonprofit. They need money. And they needed to raise awareness of the isolation that the blind feel within the sighted communities, and the problems that guide dogs, legitimate service dogs, face from phony service dogs in our communities. So I said, okay, well, a book can do both those things. I can raise money and I can raise awareness. So I wrote Guiding Emily, donating half of my proceeds to the Foundation for Blind Children. And Guiding Emily is the story of Garth, a guide dog, and Emily Main, a young woman who loses her eyesight on her honeymoon. And it's their journey together. So I wrote and published that last June. It's done very well. I'm in Screen Talks about the screen rights. And I've just finished writing the first and editing the first draft of the sequel, which is going to be titled The Unexpected Path. So I'm hopeful I'll have something on the screen, perhaps even as a series.
Wow.
I'm most proud of that book. Of all the books I've written, I think that is the sweetest, nicest book I've written.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and it's called Guiding Emily, and
yep.
and you're giving half of your proceeds to the Foundation for Blind Children. That is so heartwarming and so beautiful, and I wish you the best of luck with that. Now, you have a website where you want people to go?
Yes, I'm at www.BarbaraHinske.com. And all my books are available on Amazon and, you know, Kindle and print.
Yeah, wherever books are sold. And hopefully sometime in the future you'll start doing book tours again. And
yeah. I miss that.
You know, one of the things in your book, you have a bake sale at the school. And I was thinking, I don't think we're ever going to have bake sales again. Well, kids are going to miss out on so much. Because of this COVID, people can't be trusting. They can't have a bake sale, you know?
No, I know. That's right. I've got new neighbors, and instead of baking something homemade, I've, you know, purchased things and put them in a gift bag. Because I don't know if anybody really wants to eat something from someone else's kitchen now.
No. You know, people just don't. And I was thinking, you know, all the things that I wanted to do and all the parties I wanted to have, and I can't imagine right now anybody wanting to eat anything from, you don't, you know, that's not prepackaged. And it was sad when I read that part in the book. I hadn't thought about it until I read that part, and I thought, oh, the poor kids, you know, there aren't going to be any bake sales. So it's sort of like phone books. Young kids don't know anything about phone books. They're not going to know anything about bake sales. Anyway.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. But Barbara, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. I think you're just a marvelous person, and it's so generous of you to give to the blind, because for all of us who are readers and who love reading, the thought of what, you know, how difficult it is for blind people. Thank goodness, and there's now Audible books for them, and I you know, but still, there's a lot of work to be done, and a lot of reasons why we should be more aware of the problems of blindness and guide dogs and how we can help. And you've certainly bringing it to everybody's attention. So, Barbara Hinsky, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. It's been a real joy to talk to you.
It's been my pleasure and thrill. Thank you to you. Thank you to Rita. And I look forward to hearing more from you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? Giving her money, half of her. Oh, she's fantastic. Fantastic. And, of course, watch for it on the Hallmark Channel. And we will play Rita's Book Buzz again in July when it's Christmas in July. But right now we're going to have a commercial, and then we're coming back, and I have a Pinellas Writers member here. Oh, we're going to be talking about her book. This is exciting.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Oh, this is exciting. Shayla McBride is with me, and she is from a member of the Pinellas Writers Group, and I'm so excited to have her here today because I'm going to be talking to the group on Saturday. Hi, Shayla.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, fine. It's so nice that I was able to get you in here because I wanted to talk to you about your books. And also, you've written a book about writing. So let's just get right into it. Tell us, first, you are a member of the Pinellas Writers Group, and I'm going to be talking to you guys, huh?
Yes, and we're really excited about it. We have a good, long-running group. Pinellas Writers has been around over 30 years. And we meet every Saturday. All writers are welcome, fiction particularly, but also poetry and memoir. And you are going to tell us about the writer as octopus. We are absolutely agog.
Well, I am thrilled to be able to talk to you because, as you know, a writer has to do a lot of things in this world. And you have sort of, with your book about writing, you have tackled that and given, you have lots of ideas about writing. But first, before we talk about writing, let's talk about your series, because I found it interesting. I love the military. I will do everything to support the military. And tell us about your Carl Tanner series.
Carl Tanner series started kind of murkily, as a matter of fact, but the idea came more as a physical manifestation of what I saw as kind of a heroic figure. But I also wanted him to be a regular guy. I didn't want him to be one of those 26-year-old hard bodies that you see in the romance things. It just did, that didn't resonate to me. So I made him older. He's 40 years old. And I made him a combination of Clint Eastwood and Prince Harry. So there.
Okay. That's not a bad combination, I tell you.
Well, yeah, you know, the best of both, I guess you would say, or maybe the worst. Anyway, he's retired, and his first assignment when he's working for a security company is in Sonora Heat. When he goes to Sonora on a very badly set up operation and winds up running for his life all by himself in the middle of the desert. So I started out a romance writer and then was told that, no, you can't kill off your hero or your heroine. So I decided maybe I'd be better as a suspense and thriller writer.
Well, you know, the latest book is, of course, which one is it? It's the Not Much Choice is the newest one, right?
Right, yes, but No Good Deed will be coming out in the next 4 or 5 weeks unless Microsoft gobbles up another manuscript. So that one I'm in the middle. I'm in chapter 21 right now of the rewrite. This is like rewrite number 4.
Uh-huh.
But that's how you get a book that readers can read, is you keep rewriting.
Oh, that's true. And that's, you know, that brings us to this whole subject of your book about writing, because, you know, it's so important right now. During this pandemic-y time, I have been telling people all year, I said, you know, if you've been dreaming about writing, start writing. And that's what you have to do. You have to start. If you don't start, you're never going to get anywhere. But,
exactly,
you know,
right.
There's a lot of things to be learned along the way. And I've had writers, you know, people who have started writing, and they say, well, what do I do here? What do I do there? How do I, you know, where do I get help? And what's your top suggestions here for new writers? What are some of the things that you've discovered as you've developed into, you know, a very fine writer?
Thank you. I think it's really, really tough for somebody who has been reading and writing their entire life to suddenly realize they can't write. And that's what happens when you decide you're going to write fiction. Nonfiction's different. But when you're writing fiction, the requirements are so arcane and they're so difficult to learn. And I got to say, everybody does the same route. You go into it and you think, oh, I'm going to just ace this. I've read books I hated. I know I can do a better job. And then an hour into it, you're thinking, where'd my brain go? Just like, but it's not turned on. I can't figure, you know, I had this fabulous idea and it suddenly vanished. And, oh, what's the next word I should put down? And, you know, it's just, and I've seen it because I've taught a lot of writing classes. And I've seen, can't tell you how many people just throw their hands up and walk away. And yet the people that get published are the people that don't give up.
That's true. It all comes down to persistence. And you have to have the passion, but you have to have the dedication to put in the time, and there's no way around it. You know, Mary Higgins Clark was on my program many times, and when, you know, she became a widow and she had children to support, and she really didn't, she had a low-level job, could hardly, you know, pay the bills, and she just got up every morning at 5 o'clock and wrote, and just disciplined herself. She said, I realized that I wasn't really disciplined, and I had to find it within me to write before the kids woke up and get those pages done.
Yes. Elizabeth George, in her book on writing, said the same thing. She said, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have discipline, you won't make it.
So once you start writing and you see your words, you know, as you said, people have been reading and they've been sort of writing, not writing books, but they think they know how to write. Part of it does come, it helps if you are well read.
Yes, there's no question. And if you're reading in the genre that you enjoy, I had never read that many romances. I had always read Daniel Silva and Michael Robotham and Oh, I could name you 5,000 authors. Just like you, I've read 10,000 books. But, yeah, you have to know your genre, and you have to be willing to write not for yourself, but for the market. And it's tough.
So you started with romance, and did you find that that was easier than now going into more suspense, action, that type of thing?
Well, it probably says a lot about my life, but I am no believer in happily ever after. And I have to say that lives are difficult, and there's always a left turn that you didn't expect. And to expect a perfect life is not reasonable. It's just, you know that, I know that. Every adult should know that. So when I started writing romance, it was like, oh, geez, I got to give him a happy ever after, but what I really want to do is shoot her.
Okay.
So I was a finalist in a Daphne contest, one of the big contests that the romance writers had. And I came in fourth of four, and my roommate at the time said, well, no wonder, you silly thing. You killed off the heroine. You can't do that in a romance. She said, this is really not a romance. This is a thriller. So here we are.
So here you are. Well, yeah, that's true. You can't do that. It's so funny. You know, as I've been getting these emails from people, and they say, you know, and a few now because they started. You know, I started telling them this. Can you believe it's a year? No, it's like a year. I started a year ago. There were the first few weeks I couldn't even get in here, and because I was, you know, stuck at home, and I didn't want to, well, the studio wasn't even open. We were broadcasting from home, and I was broadcasting. And then finally, there were some days that I couldn't even broadcast from home because it was too noisy. And that's when Tasha Alexander, and I know that you really admire her, and Tasha Alexander and her husband took over the program one day to help me out. But Tasha always says, you know, she also, when she started writing, she was, you know, a young mother, lots of things happening, and she realized, mm-hmm. she had been saying for years, I'm going to write, and she didn't write. And then one day she just said, okay, I can't say that to myself ever again. I have to actually sit down and write. But she had this image in her head that, you know, you have to have just the right desk at the right window with the right, you know, and after she realized, I'm never going to have the right desk at the right window. I better just write this darn thing already. And she did. And you see what happened. She landed up with the Lady Emily series. And she's, you know.
Adore Lady Emily.
I do, too. And we're hoping to have here at, you know, I've been planning now for a year to have a big Lady Emily tea party and hat contest, because I love tea parties and I love hats.
Cool.
And we've had to put that off. But you know, you just have to write wherever you are. You don't, and I mean, you don't even need a computer to start, because Doug Brunt, who wrote The Ghosts of Manhattan, he just started when he got the idea that I'm going to be a writer. He was sitting in, again, you know, with a legal pad in the airport, and he started writing, and he wrote the first few chapters of his book just by hand, and you can do it. So you don't have to wait around until you have that perfect moment, because, as you said, there aren't all these perfect moments in life.
Well, there are very few of them, and I have enjoyed many of them, but I have also, I was in the Peace Corps in 2000-2001. I was posted in Morocco, where they send the old farts, and I did a lot of writing because I had a lot of time on my hands, and I got stacks of books, you know, notebooks, and that's really what started me on my life of crime, so to speak. I had written before that in the 90s and 80s, but once Peace Corps just kind of gave me the impetus and the appreciation for odd moments. So that's been, here I am.
That's actually, you know, I've known people in the Peace Corps, But I never knew actually that we send people to Morocco. That was sort of new to me when I discovered that you were in Morocco. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was in a little tiny town in southern Morocco called Tizmit. And it was a walled city, and I lived in the old town, not the new town. And I loved it. I loved my, one of my neighbors was an 800-pound bull. So they used to take him for walks down the street.
Isn't life interesting? The things that we can get into. It's funny. Some people will say, "Oh, well, I've had all these jobs. I don't know. You know, I don't know what I can do with them." And I say, everything that you do in life, you can use this when you're a writer. You can pull this out at some point. So maybe one of your characters is going to have a bull as a neighbor.
Yes, I actually have a book that's unpublished about life in Morocco, but in the 1900s, in the Edwardian period. Someday maybe I'll sell that.
Well, that sounds interesting. I love the Edwardian period. Well, it's right up there with Tasha Alexander now that she's gone past the Victorian, and we're now with King Edward. So I
never thought her books were Victorian. They really were Edwardian.
Yeah, they were. But you know, she
after the first one.
Yeah. So we have. I think I'd like to read that book actually. You've intrigued me here, Shayla.
Thank you. I love to intrigue people.
Okay. Well, and I love books set in the Edwardian period and set in Morocco and Egypt and all that period. I think that's fantastic.
You run up to World War I.
Wow. Yeah, well, you probably have to.
If you read that, you've got to run up to World War II. It's the same process. You've got the run up to any war is very much the same process.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Really?
it's crazy. Nothing, as I told Tasha the other day, nothing changes because she's got also in her book a run up to the German war and the Russians, and nothing changes. So it's sort of fun for writers. We can keep going. There's always something interesting to do. Now, when of course, one of the things, and you mentioned that you're finishing up a book. Explain why. This is, some writers have told me this, and more than one have told me, I finished the book. It's done. I finished it yesterday, and now I'm ready to query.
Oh no, you're not.
Forget that.
There are so many steps, and this is probably the big downside to how easy it is to get published, is how fatally easy it is. And if you publish your first book without the polishing and the feedback and the beta reading, and I can't even, do we have 3 weeks? We can talk about them. But the fact is that if you publish that first book and it is not as good as a third or fourth book, it is around your neck like an albatross for the rest of your life, unless you change your name, if you have a different pen name.
Yeah.
But there is the process a new writer simply does not understand, and there's no reason why they should, because it's a very organic, personal process of discovery of your, not only what you can do, but what you need to learn to do.
Well, that's why a group like the Pinellas Writers Group is so important for authors. Tell us how does it help to belong to a group, that you're not just a solitary writer writing for yourself and then publishing without any input from anybody else? Explain how the writers group works.
This particular writers group is a little different than many others because we meet every Saturday between 9:30 and noon year-round. The only time we don't meet is if a major holiday falls on that Saturday. With Zoom, and we've been meeting with Zoom for over a year now, and we'll continue to even after we go back to in-person. You get to read your work in progress, not something already published, but something you're literally working on, and up to 8 minutes. And that doesn't sound like much, but it's three or four pages, and I can tell you that I can read one page and tell pretty much where a writer is in their career. And like Hemingway said, we are all apprentices in a craft we will never master. And it never stops. I'm sure Tasha Alexander would say, I'm taking this to the next level. There's always a next level. And Pinellas writers, and we're really very candid, but we're very, very supportive, and no mean. Mean is not allowed. And we welcome everybody. We are a subscription group, and but we offer a lot of value for the money.
And of course, one of the things that for writers, you have to understand when you finished a book, you need an editor, you need editing, you need this to find beta readers, to get just to have this input that any professional writer needs.
Yeah, well, it's like a chef is not going to put out a dish for consumption by the public until everybody in the kitchen has tested it. You know, it's the same thing. You know, you have to have that feedback.
Well, I think that, you know, it's just wonderful what the group has done. I know that you have many members throughout here, the Pinellas County, who are very successful. And part of their success, I think, comes from working with other people and having that input that that they get from your group. So I'm looking forward to talking to all of you on Saturday. And meanwhile, people, what other books, the name of your writing book, and this is fascinating. Tell us about why you decided to write the writing book, the book about writing, and about, just in general about it. It's called, what is it called?
Your First Fiction.
Your First Fiction. And tell us
about it. Won a prize.
Oh, won a prize. Okay, tell us about it.
I had gone to Killer Nashville, and you were able to put your books in competition for a prize, and I didn't even realize that I had won the prize. I was sitting in the bar having a Bloody Mary, and they were awarding me a prize in the next room. But it was just the best nonfiction published in that year. And I changed the name to Writing Your First Fiction. Originally, it was A is for Author, which is a really great title, except it doesn't tell you a thing about the book. So Writing Your First Fiction tells you what it's all about. It's designed for the new writer that has questions that nobody is answering, and maybe they don't even know what the question is. So there's 350 subjects in the book. And, you know, they range from a story to a zebra crossing. And you can look it up. Let's say that you say, oh, well, I don't understand what dialogue is. You go to the D's, you look up dialogue, and you read it. Or you look up motivation, or you look up social media, whatever you want. I've covered an awful lot in this book that a new writer does not automatically know.
Exactly. It's a very good book. It's called Writing Your First Fiction, The New Writer's Guide. And, you know, I think that, as you said, you've done it all alphabetical, so it's all in order there. People can check it out, and there's some, you know, really serious and important information in the book that new writers will really appreciate. So, Shayla, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Shayla McBride, and just fantastic. And her books are available online. Check it out. It's Shayla, S-H-A-Y-L-A, and McBride. And find out. And she has lots of books there. And I'm sure you'll find one that you'll enjoy.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you on Saturday. Bye-bye now, Shayla.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, she's nice. I like this this book. What I like about her book for writers is that it is in all nice alphabetical order, very well organized, and it has lots and lots of information for you. Now, before I have an ending, I want to play a poem. I'm in the mood for a poem. After thinking about Alfred Lord Tennyson, I want to play just a little poem by We have it ready?
Squiggles on Paper by J.S. Lamb. Words and numbers on a page, writ in love or burning rage, gurgling, burgling through our brains, happy, sad, pleasure, pain. Feelings slide through pencils, pens, rhyming, chiming now and then. Who brings these squiggles to our eyes? Friends with nimble lows and highs.
Oh, I love that poem. This is what I'm telling you. All of you, if you want to write, you can just start writing. And one of the wonderful ways to become a better writer is to read poetry and to write poetry. And I mentioned Alfred Lord Tennyson earlier because it's funny that it was, let's say he's a character in Barbara Hinsky's book. And if you haven't read Alfred Lord Tennyson, listen to these words. He writes, "To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield." That's important as a writer. You're out there, you're striving, you're seeking, and you're finding out all sorts of things as you become a writer, but you never yield. You don't give up. You don't say, oh, that's it. You just keep going, and you keep working hard. And I love poetry, and you really should read more poetry, I'm telling you. And definitely Jim Lamb, who, you know, is just a fantastic guest on the program before, and he writes lovely poetry. Well, I want to thank Jim for that poem and for all of the things that and wonderful things he does for Joy on Paper, because this has been an exciting time to get to, you know, 6 years. I'm overwhelmed with all of the wonderful cards and emails I've received from everybody. So, you know, it's very emotional. It's very emotional to get to this point after all the struggle and everything, and particularly this pandemic year. And I'm hoping for more sponsors. So if you want to sponsor the program, do that too. That'd be great. But meanwhile, just remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to have your words, well, my goodness, somebody will pick them up and make them into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel like Barbara Hinsky did. Or I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries, because I love her Witch City Mysteries. And what a series that would make on the Hallmark Channel. So it could happen to you. It happened to Barbara. I hope that it happens to Carol. And it will happen, and perhaps even to Rita Moreau, because she's got a new series coming out, and we're going to be talking about that soon. And that's exciting, on April 8th. Meanwhile, everybody, just say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me. Aha! And I'm saluting him, because just like Winston Churchill, one of my heroes, I wanted to be a general, and he wanted to be a general, and we would have been great generals. Bye-bye now.